Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we're going to take a look at Mercury's square to Pluto, which is now coming back this week through Mercury's retrograde, which is happening today. So this week we're going to have to break this transit down in a couple of different ways. We're going to have to break it down by talking about Mercury's retrograde, Mercury retrogrades themselves, which we'll do a little bit later this week. Today I want to talk about Mercury square Pluto again, because really the theme of the week is Mercury's second square to Pluto. It went through its first square last week in direct motion. This week, it's going back through the same square in retrograde motion. So that's what we're going to discuss today. Before I dive in, I want to remind all of you, I'm in the midst of promoting my new program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. Check it out on my website, nightlightastrology.com. Go to the courses page. Click on the first year course. You can learn all about it. There's 30 classes on the year plus 12 guest lectures. We have breakout study sessions. We have a tutoring staff and an ongoing discussion forum. You can email me year-round with questions. You can attend the webinars live on Saturdays at noon Eastern time starting in November, or you can follow along at your own pace by watching the recordings on our class website. You can keep all of the class material and download it for yourself and go at your own pace. It's a great program. There's tons of bonus content, recommended reading, listening, quizzes, all sorts of material that allows you to go as deeply as you want to with each lecture. Or, you know, for a lot of people out there who are just taking this to just sort of casually deepen your hobby interest in astrology, you can just take it more lightly. People can take in a certification exam at the end, especially if you're going for, you know, if your goal is to practice for others. So it kind of meets everyone where they're at. Check out the payment options. This is an early bird payment that if you use now, you can save $500 off, so be sure to take advantage of that. There's also a payment plan and need-based tuition assistance if you're having any kinds of problems, say due to COVID, or you're a single parent, or whatever the case might be, so be sure to check that out. If you have any questions, feel free to email us, info@nightlightastrology.com. And for all my regular listeners, I appreciate your patience while I promote my program. This is literally the only form of advertising that I use, so it's really helpful to just take a minute at the beginning of every video in the month or so leading up to my program and try to share it with people. So today, let's take a look at the real-time clock, and we're going to get a feel for this week's second Mercury-Pluto square. All right, you can see it here. Mercury is square to Mercury. You got to see the little S next to Mercury. That means Mercury is stationing and will be retrograde today. And then as the week goes on through the retrograde, Mercury stays within a degree of Pluto all week and finally makes the square to Pluto by Friday, October 1st. So this week we'll be doing the horoscopes for October, the monthly overview for October. We'll be taking another look at Mercury's retrograde. If there's time, if not this week, then next week, I'll also be sharing some of the stories that you guys have had from Venus opposite Uranus last week and some of you Mercury's first square to Pluto last week. Remember, if you ever have a story, use the hashtag grabbed. The planets were called grahas, which means to grab or seize. It also means to grasp or to understand in a sense. And so we're sharing our stories to talk about the way that we get grabbed by the planets and also the way we understand what they bring into our lives. So use that hashtag grab, share the name of the transit, like Mercury square Pluto or Venus opposite Uranus last week, for example, and then share your story in a couple of sentences, and we might use it for an episode. If you feel like you'd rather email us, send it to grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. We don't reply to those emails, but we may use your story. So just make sure you don't have anything that you share with that hashtag that you don't mind being reread in a future episode. It won't have your name on it, but anyway. So Mercury square to Pluto again this week. It hasn't moved. It's been within a degree of Pluto now for a whole week already. So this is week number two of Mercury square Pluto. Last week in part one, we talked about truth. Today, we're going to talk about it again, but from a slightly different angle. One of the greatest criticisms leveled at Mercury and Libra in general has to do with indecision. You will hear people say, well, Mercury and Libra, you know, sophisticated taste, like an architect or an interior designer, or, you know, maybe even a composer or someone who has some kind of technical ability, Mercury, an aesthetic or artistic ability. This is Mercury in a Venus ruled sign. So those are all some of the most positive things that you hear about Mercury in Libra. But one of the most negative things that you often hear is, oh, Mercury in Libra, there's like a permanent gray space. You can't make up your mind. There's an, not really an ambivalence, but kind of an indecisiveness. And while that's true, I want to go into what I'm going to call today the mantra of maybe, and why the mantra of maybe can be, not always, but can be a very useful thing, especially when we're pairing Mercury with Pluto. Because one of the things that happens with Mercury when it squares Pluto is we get, whether it's intellectual or think of like investigative journalism, for example, you're digging into something and then the truth is revealed. Any kind of mental or intellectual probing or exploring or communicating that slowly reveals or uncovers or excavates things that have been living in the shadows or have been in the unconscious or somehow sealed or kept away or secretive will come up and come to be seen. We talked last week, for example, about truth bombs. I want to talk about truth again from the standpoint of the word maybe, and why the word maybe is so important as a way of continuing the process of discovery. One of the things to remember about Mercury in Libra is that Mercury in Libra is the exaltation of Saturn. So when Mercury is in Libra, one thing that you can say that kind of helps conceptualize the way that Mercury's attitude is that Mercury in Libra, Mercury exalts Saturn. It's a way of kind of just almost imagining what kind of attitude Mercury has while it's in the sign of Libra. It exalts Saturn. So a Mercury that exalts Saturn, one thing that it can get into, unfortunately, is going to be like oppositional or black and white thinking. Saturn was the planet in ancient astrology that was associated with the aspect called an opposition. Now, the opposition in ancient astrology is an interesting one, and it was talked about by Platonic and Pythagorean philosophers, probably some of the philosophical progenitors of astrology, or people who were their philosophy is very closely tied into the chain of transmission that inspired the earliest astrologers, that they thought of like binaries or polarities in a very specific way. They thought of them as things that were both absolutely opposed to one another. Black is black and white is white and never shall the two cross. But then simultaneously, there's another way in which opposites relate where they're fluid across the spectrum and both exist simultaneously. Isn't that strange to think about? It's like there's a way of saying, for example, the feminine is the feminine and not the masculine, and the masculine is the masculine and not the feminine. And there's a way in which they exist in stark contrast to one another. Never shall the two cross. They have to be in some ways opposed and different, and they can't mix or blend categorically. But then there's another sense at the exact same time in which they're always blending and never in a static polarity state. And this was a paradox in a sense, but one that ancient mystics seem to have embraced. So Saturn, the ruler of oppositions, is very similar in the sense that, Mercury in Libra can get into a state where it is paralyzed by black and white thinking. And it says, well, I don't want to fall into black and white thinking. And so it falls into almost like a muddled space of gray where it's like, I'm going to play both sides. I want to be popular. I don't want to ruffle feathers. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. I'm paralyzed by indecision. I can't put a risk into anything. I don't even know how I feel. Okay. So all of those might be potentially negative. Some of those are just considerate and careful, but some of those might be negative. And that's a result of Mercury, in a sense, being paralyzed by the feeling of those tensions of opposites that Saturn is really aware of. And this is, remember, Mercury in Libra is in the exaltation of Saturn. On the other hand, ancient mystics said that opposites, although they exist in this never shall the two meet, black and white, fundamental, absolute kind of way, that they also, the tension between the two held in such a state would creatively yield a third. So the tension between, let's say, a binary yields a third. like, let's just say is an example of like male and female make a baby. And so there's a way in which the blending or synthesizing of the dynamism between the opposites yields something that a creative result, some kind of synthesis that brings about a third. And the third is somehow a blending of the two. That was one way that ancient astrologers looked at not just opposites, but the way that opposites should be related to and held in the psyche in order to understand and be in touch with the dynamic flow of energy in life and in reality. So similarly, you know, opposites are something that, you know, often you can't separate things neatly. And so sometimes there's truly just a gray space where you can't somehow be pushed into saying one thing is right or wrong, one thing is this or that. So there's different ways of relating to opposites. And one of the big ironies I see is, you know, when students come into my programs and we start talking about the philosophy surrounding a planet like Saturn and the aspect of an opposition in ancient astrology, that we have, ironically, very absolute ways of thinking about duality itself or about opposites themselves. We're not nearly as flexible as we should be. In the sense of, you know, for example, one of the things that we generally think of is duality is bad. Opposites are bad. It's more nuanced. It's more flexible. It's more subtle than that. But ancient astrologers said, well, you can't have the subtlety and you can't have the commixtures and the comminglings and the gray space and the synthesis between opposites that leads to creative thirds without there also being absolutes that are sort of fundamental and opposed and can't cross. So you need dualities to have non-dualities. You need binaries to have non-binaries. And this was their way of thinking. You see the same thing repeated in Taoism and in the I Ching, for example, in the fluidity of yin and yang. You see the yin and yang are absolutely opposed. The white is white and the black is black and they're different. And yet there's a little speck of black and white and white and black. So same kind of thing. This all might sound kind of heady, I know. But let's bring it back to the important thing here, which is that Mercury, God that's associated with the mind and with the intellect and with the discerning, rational, you know, space of the mind, is in a sign right now in a retrograde that has a lot to do with these kinds of binaries and opposites and the tension of opposites and the trouble that we're given by them, that trying to figure out how to give space for opposites while learning how to commingle them, how to hold tension of opposites without letting them tear us apart. It's a tricky thing dealing with opposites, and we're dealing with them every day, all day long. Most of us have gotten so used to it that we go on autopilot. At any rate, when Mercury is squared to Pluto, one of the great things that can happen when Mercury is in Libra, squared to Pluto and Capricorn, is that we can come to understand things that lie in the shadows of our of different binaries. And there's all sorts of them. Let's just talk about it from, and this is where the mantra of maybe comes in. So let's just talk about it from like a very basic everyday standpoint. Every day, let's say we have a, you know, a judgment of an experience that sucked. You know what I mean? Like I have probably at least a few moments like that every day where I'm like, that sucked. That was terrible. And the mantra of maybe just goes dot, 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 maybe. Or it could be positive. That was the best thing ever. That was so much better than anything else. Maybe. You don't literally have to say maybe to include a maybe in the way that we're thinking or processing or judging or evaluating or criticizing or coming to make decisions. Maybe can be in the way that we hold an experience, the way that we come to a decision. So it's not like maybe needs to paralyze us or make us incapable of, maybe doesn't mean we have to doubt everything. Maybe doesn't mean we can't have judgments or we can't be discerning or we can't make decisions or we can't have feelings or preferences. It doesn't mean we can't believe in absolutes. It doesn't mean everything is relative and gray. It just means that there's like a dot, dot, dot at the end of almost everything in life. So again, this sucked. Maybe. How can that change? It doesn't have to, you don't have to literally put maybe in at the end of everything. It's not literally about the word maybe. But for example, one of the things that we learn in yoga philosophy is that if I have an experience that I'm judging as really bad, and I'm not trying to say it wasn't bad by saying maybe, What I'm doing by saying maybe or allowing for the maybe space in my judgment of the situation is to keep it open. So, man, that was a really challenging experience. And then maybe I can just say, interesting. That was really challenging. It's interesting that that came up. Or similarly, with a really good experience that we want to hold on to and get really attached to, that was really beautiful. And maybe you can just add, you know, interesting. Because with interest, we stay interested, you know? So if it's bad or if it's good, maybe is also, you could say, a space of staying interested, staying open, keeping the experience open to continued imagining, continued revisioning, continued dialogue. That doesn't mean, again, that there's no truth or there's no place for resolution or that there's no place for some kind of, you know, absolute resolution or something like that. It's just, if you can imagine that all of the let's just imagine that the ultimate goal of spiritual life is to commune with God or to commune with the divine. And then let's just imagine, however, that the divine is not like a static state. That the divine, whether it's beauty, goodness, love, justice, mystery, mercy, compassion, truthfulness, like whatever virtue you can think of as the high wholeness, paradox. I mean, all of the most beautiful qualities, there's endless qualities of God, right? But if you think of experiencing any of them, the point is that we would want to experience them in an ongoing dynamic relationship. So that you're never arriving at some kind of static conclusion when it comes to love or beauty or truth or goodness or justice. And in order to keep an experience going, you add a little maybe, you add a little dot, 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 you add a little interesting to it. And this is something that Mercury in Libra is actually really good at. It's not all just indecision, indecisiveness, and gray or troublemaking decisions or not wanting to offend anybody by coming to a conclusion. I get that. That's a fair criticism. But also the mantra of maybe is so important. Think about it like this. How many times do you wish you would have caught yourself when you thought, I really need to give this person a piece of my mind. I need to give them advice. This is going to actually help them. You know, I'm just trying to do them a favor here. I'm just going to like, just give them this little criticism. And this will really help them. How often would we be helped by a little maybe at the end of that, right? Because sometimes it just adding that in, that little space of, let's call it divine doubt, sacred doubt. We can just open up a little bit around, you know, the immediacy, the reactionary, the sense of certainty, the sense of self-righteousness. We just like open it up. And then suddenly it's like, maybe. I don't know what's going to come from this. And when we do that, we move from I'm the judge of the situation to I'm the student of the situation. We move to I'm the seer, meaning I'm the all knower, or I can see exactly what's going on here, to I'm curious about what's happening here. Not curious because I'm not capable of knowing, but curious because I want to invite more of what's hidden here. Because I know Mercury square Pluto, that there are layers and layers and layers of deep, rich, life-giving truth, that anything that is divine, that's worth getting to know, that's worth embodying, that's worth getting closer to, is going to be dynamic and ongoing and ever unfolding, not just some static state. So we have to be careful because our clinging to bliss, our clinging to judgment of a situation, especially based on like, you know, our intelligence and our sense of certainty about things often closes off the ability of the experience to keep deepening, to keep unfolding, to keep speaking. And then what happens? Later, we come to a Mercury square Pluto moment. And the truth that we have been blocked off to because of an initial judgment that didn't have enough of the dot, dot, dot in it blows up in our face. And it feels like the truth that we've been blocking out suddenly appears like something menacing us or something disturbing us or shocking us or pulling the rug out from underneath us. Whereas it's not nearly that scary if from the beginning, you know, I said, maybe I'm going to go ahead with this relationship because I really like this person. And I think this relationship is really going to make me happy, but I don't know. Will it? We'll see. Right? And you stay open to that. how much easier is it to deal with it if the person doesn't call or they don't text, or you think that maybe they're being unfaithful, or, you know, you go through some highs and some lows, but you keep that attitude. Isn't it possible? Don't we have big enough imaginations? We can imagine that I can love someone deeply and be deeply committed in love and be very vulnerable and in a sense attached, while also leaving room for whatever may unfold. So one of the things that Mercury square Pluto is offering us this week is the ability to just, you know, first of all, if things come up in the shadows of our certainties, our judgments, previous evaluations, criticisms, and just show us the light of something, you know, in the realm of the opposite that's been blocked off, that's totally natural. You know, I come to a conclusion about what's good. It should not be surprised if in the next weeks, something about what we thought was good turns out to have been a little, there's a curse in every blessing and there's a blessing in every curse kind of thing. That should not be surprising, but it's also, there's an opportunity for us this week to shift the way we think, to shift the way we relate. If you want to have a relationship with a human being, is it any different? The second that I like look at my wife and I'm like, oh, I know my wife. I know what she's like. I know what she likes. I know what she doesn't like. I'm like, yeah, there's a way in which that's true. But don't you guys know? I mean, surely you guys know that kills intimacy. You know, if I every day can say, I think she likes this. I think she doesn't like that. Or I want, like, if I want to stay open to continuing to deepen intimacy, whether it's with a friend or with my wife or with my kids, one of the surest ways to kill that intimacy is to come to conclusions about the person. Oh, I know them. They're like this. Oh, I know them. They're like this. Or even to do that about ourselves. I'm like this. This is who I am. This is, you know, today we identify in so many ways, right? Like I like this. I don't like that. You know, our profile handles are designed to give us all these different titles. I'm an astrologer, or whether it's gender or politics, like this is my political party, or this is how I identify, none of which are wrong, right? I don't think it's wrong to have a sense of identity in the world. And we're all born with different, you know, categories that we may identify with more or less. But even in those, isn't it so important to stay open and to say, yeah, maybe this is how I am for now. We'll see what happens. I think it's a healthy space for all of us to be in. And again, we just have to remember we are intelligent and imaginative enough beings to hold space for what we don't know, to hold space for a little divine doubt and uncertainty, even as we have things that we have to judge or evaluate or make decisions about or take a stand for, or things that we identify with in our everyday lives. We can do both. Remember that the opposites, there's a way in which the ancient astrologers said that both ways of relating to opposites exist simultaneously. I can have a way of saying, for example, I identify as an astrologer, but there's another sense in which I can go, I think, I don't really know if I'm an astrologer. I mean, it feels like that most days, but I don't know. I don't even know if I like this some days. You know what I mean? It's really important to hold space for that. Because that's where interesting things, at least in my career as an astrologer, for example, start growing in and coming in and informing me. It's like for the same thing in Krishna consciousness, for example, in bhakti yoga, we say that the sign of a devotee of God is one who does not act or feel or like identify as a devotee. It's the person who's like, you know, maybe they're living their lives with a lot of devotional practices, but they're like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't feel like anything. I don't, you know, so because in that space, it's not that you're sitting there with some self-deprecating attitude. It's that you're allowing some room for the other, the sacred other, the sacred opposite, whatever the opposite might be, to come in and inform and fill and create, right? So these are esoteric teachings about Mercury in the sign of Saturn's exaltation, the sign of the balance, the sign of the scales, the weighing of opposites. And with a square to a planet, that has to do with this excavation of hidden things that lie in the shadows. So, you know, it's interesting, for example, I've watched, you know, in the news recently, there was a young missing girl, a Caucasian girl. And I'm forgetting her name now, but you guys who watch the news know this. And I don't watch the news, but I'm always aware of what's happening in the news because of it'll make it into social media, you know? And so I saw, oh, there's this person missing. My first thought was, oh, that's interesting. You know, it's interesting which missing person stories the media chooses to focus on because they fit certain narratives that sell and stuff like that. And there's missing people every day. And that was like one of my first thoughts, you know, and I was kind of like a little irritated, aside from the fact that I had true care and concern and empathy for this person who was actually missing. And it sounds like some horrible things happened. I believe she died. So at any rate, but then it was funny because I was thinking that and I was like, yeah, this is why I don't tune into the media, because there's missing people every day. And now there's like, you know, this infatuation with this one missing person story, when really what's lying in the shadows of that, this is, you know, I have several Libra placements in my chart, including Saturn. What's lying in the shadow of that is, of course, all of the missing people who are not being, who go missing every day, but their stories are never told. And I was just thinking about that, not with any like major judgment. It was just like passing through my mind, right? And then, you know, and then in the media, like within, I don't know, like maybe it was within a week or something, all the stories that I came through were like, is this is the media being like, is the media focusing on like tragic young white girls who are missing? And what about the voices of all the other people who are missing? And I thought it was, you know, of course that same thought had crossed through my mind, but here now is the media capitalizing on that story. And then, you know, being like, oh, well, let's make sure we tell the story of whatever's in the shadow, right? And I want to make clear that we're not talking about that kind of reactionary swinging between the opposites to make sure that every single person is always pleased and no one is ever left out and nothing is ever, you know, because there's a way in which we can swing from one opposite to another just to like make sure everyone's pleased and make sure that everything is being covered and make sure that everything is equal and fair. And like there's, I understand that impulse. It's not all wrong, right? But that's not what we're talking about when we say like hold the tension of the opposites. It's not like a race to make sure that like we're constantly appealing to whatever opposite might be getting left out. It's about making space for whatever might need to come through in the shadows, right? And so like, and again, like I understood why the media was covering, but I thought it was kind of ironic. It was the media that created the very binary that then they were, you know, progressive looking enough to then cover again within 3 days. So we're not talking about like a reactionary swinging of like, oh, well, just make sure you're always checking your assumptions and always look over your shoulder and make sure that you're, you know, walk on eggshells. And, you know, it's not like a PC awareness of opposites is not really what I'm talking about, even though there's a place for all of that. What we're talking about is subtler than that and really gentler and much more mundane. It's much more everyday. It's much more quiet. It's much more basic. It lives in the small fibers of our lives, right? It's like, for example, if my daughter comes home from school, like preschool, and she says, you know, I had this really terrible experience. I empathize with her. But what I've noticed as a parent, for example, is that if I go, well, you know, Summer, what was the experience? Rather than me jumping to the conclusion that it was a terrible experience, which it very well might have been, but I go, tell me about it. And if I stay interested and curious in what she's saying, and I ask questions about it, and I help her open up the experience, suddenly more comes through. And it's not that it's no longer a bad experience, it's that it's a bad experience, and it's also a whole experience where there's going to be some other kind of opposite that comes in because the hurt was there, it might have closed her off immediately to that. And that's how we really should deal with trauma of negative experiences and trauma in general. Open it up. So, okay, let's very gently and paying attention to the wound and the hurt. Let's open it up. What else is there? Let's get curious about it. Let's get interested. This is how we deal with trauma. We often don't realize that it goes in the opposite direction as well. If my daughter comes home from school and is like, that was the best day ever. I had the best time with this new friend. She's my best friend. And if I open it up and ask more and more questions, I'm not trying to deflate her, but I'm trying to get her to explore the nuances, because I know that if she goes off to school the next day and she's so glommed on to this one person, she's setting herself up potentially for, you know, maybe getting hurt when that person wants to play with someone else. So I had, you know, it's like, and I noticed this, and it's like parenting for me has just been so healing, because it's been like a way of, you know, realizing my own tendencies, you know what I mean? And so, you know, even with good things, if we can stay open, that was amazing, right? I'm so attached to it. It's like, stay curious about it. You can say that was amazing. And I wonder what more will come through as I let it sift. And it's like, have a relational, participatory, slight distance, leave a little space for Jesus on the dance floor. You know, you know what I mean? And in that space, you could think about it as the Holy Ghost. You could think about it as the erotic space of Tantra between ourselves and experiences. There's always a little bit of separation that we need in order for the opposites inherent within any situation to keep creating and moving. So the mantra of maybe doesn't have to be a literal one. It's just the way that we're holding and perceiving things, because otherwise you get to a Mercury square Pluto week and all of the places that we have been, you know, just we've been locked down in certain kinds of rigid ways of thinking, judging, and perceiving. And remember, there's a little hole of black in the white and white in the black. And the mysterious magic of Pluto will just erupt through that tiny little hole. And all of a sudden you'll see what's been lingering in the shadows of our judgments and our evaluations. And the lesson really should be, hey, look, this doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to be a volcanic explosion. If we get into the habit of adding a little dot, 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 a little sacred, maybe a little openness, a little sense of curiosity, staying interested in things, allowing, but like, for example, James Hillman would say, if you have an animal that shows up in a dream, the worst enemy of the animal in the dream is for you to interpret it, because then you kill the animal in the dream. You kill the spirit in the dream, which is a living force that will continue speaking to you if you engage with it in a conversation. A lot of the times interpreting dreams kills the actual images and dream animals and dream creatures that may want to continue speaking to you. Oh, well, the snake was my mother. You know what I mean? And the mother means this. And now I got this message. Now I can go improve myself or something like that. Oh, I saw a turkey vulture, you know, or whatever. And so it means this. Oh, thank God I got the message, you know? Well, what about the turkey vulture? You know, I mean, like, you just killed it. And so we don't want to be the killer of experiences. We want to be the relator. We want to be one who relates to experiences. It's not even, it sounds a little crazy. It sounds like, you know, almost like you can't ever, well, in bhakti, for example, we would say that these experiences are really just God in different disguises. And if you want to get to know God, it's like, used this analogy before. Like when I lived in Michigan, in the morning times, there'd be deer that gathered out in the back of my grandparents' house. I was living in my parents' retirement cottage right next to my grandparents. And there were deer that came out in the mornings in this meadow outside of the back window. And it was like, you know, if I rushed out to see them in the morning, they would run. But if I sat and very gently approached and sat and waited and watched quietly and was very careful of my breath, they'd come closer and nearer and they would relax. And then I could see them and have a little communion with them. Can we imagine that all experience is actually like that? That doesn't mean that there's never a space for enthusiasm or fun or, you know, like some kind of raucous, you know, there's some animals that like to dance and they actually come out when you just start slam dancing or something. But the point is that we have to know how to continue coaxing the infinite depths out of experience itself. And it's just one of the biggest killers of that are going to be, you know, reactions and judgments and so forth. And then again, you get to Mercury, Pluto. And what happens if you've been doing that? Whatever you've been locking out, whatever depths you've been denying, they come pouring through and it feels like, you know, you can feel crazy and you can feel overwhelmed. And there's just no need to live in a spin cycle like that. So at any rate, I hope that this has been an interesting meditation on Mercury and Pluto, on the mantra of maybe, and again, the process of relating to things. Some teachings on opposites, really beautiful to think about Saturn and the opposites. Look, ancient astrology was deep, deep stuff. It was for people who were ready to engage, you know, engage with life on mental levels, on emotional levels, on physical levels, all at once. But remember that this talk, if it feels heady, remember Mercury in Libra is an air sign. So, you know, this talk is kind of airy, but there's a way in which our life is being lived every day in the mind and through the mind. And if we don't ever take time to have a little space of exploration for what that's like, these airy currents are invisible to most of us. One of the things about Mercury Pluto is that Mercury Pluto, you know, Mercury goes into the underworld and brings things out again from morning star to evening star to morning star, going down into the underworld and coming out. Pluto Hades was the underworld. So Mercury in Libra is also an opportunity for us to become aware of how and why we think and thought patterns and ways that we relate to things, especially through opposites. And remember, there are two different ways of holding opposites. Never shall the two meet. Black is black and white is white, and never shall the two meet. A legitimate way of looking at things and experiencing things, as well as the fact that black and white are always moving on a fluid spectrum. There's always a fluidity and a dynamic tension that keeps things unfolding, keeps things moving in creative dynamism. So hope this has been a useful meditation for you guys today. We will keep going talking about Mercury retrogrades this week. We're going to explore the astrology of October, lots of good stuff ahead. So be sure to check out the course coming up pretty soon. I hope to see some of you in class, and we will talk to you again tomorrow. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.